So I'm kind of puzzled because what you have just described here with writing to off-screen memory basically is just double buffering, right?
That's somewhat correct, but what we've really done is sort of enhanced or regularized the double buffering. So, for example, I didn't really talk about Direct3D in this either. In particular, Direct3D has always had double buffering or end buffering built in. GDI doesn't have direct support in the sense that there's an API call that says double buffer me. Instead, you can create an off-screen DC, draw to that, and then blit the entire DC. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is that's entirely local to the application, and the rest of the system doesn't really know what's happening. With the composition system, what we're trying to do is make it so that the back buffers technically it's really the front buffer of the swap chain for D3D is visible to the compositor, and the compositor can do its magic on it, and that it's all registered with the composition system. And that was fundamental changes that we made during Vista, was to make it possible to create these redirection services through the different APIs. So we changed the runtimes for Direct3D, and we changed the runtime for GDI to go create these redirection services and register them with the DWM.
Okay, so as a programmer today, should I still continue to do double buffering if I'm just writing a regular GDI app? Or?
Yeah, so this will get into some of the output changes discussion, but for Direct3D, you continue doing exactly what you did before. We made some more efficiency improvements there so that we made it so that what we call flip mode works directly to the compositor. So the front buffer, the end of the flip chain for D3D is exactly connected to the compositor, and so it's very efficient. And what was happening in the Vista timeframe is we were, again, making an extra copy of the memory. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted to eliminate that. For GDI, we didn't get as far along as we wanted to, that you still need to create an extra memory DC if you're trying to reduce flicker. And a lot of this comes down to the fact that GDI never had any sort of first-class double buffering support built into it. We looked at trying to add that. But again, it's the kind of thing that it wouldn't automatically work for every application. It would be a new API, and the applications would have to opt into that. And we're still not sure that we want to continue to add complicated changes to GDI that where applications have to go change to take advantage of them versus do some new things that we're working on, which I'll talk about, or the new APIs that we're adding for new ways of doing output.
Okay, cool. So what are the new APIs? There's Direct2D, right, and there's DirectWrite.
Okay, so again, I'm going to do some erasing.
Erasing. Let's erase.
So what we'll talk about is the output half of the system, or the output two-thirds of the system, depending on your point of view. Thanks.
Are we the erase holder?
So, again, like if I did this as a 500-foot view, there's this thing called DirectX that has been around since 1995 or so.
Yes.
And originally, when DirectX was started, it was oriented towards to game development, mm-hmm. and that we were really trying to make the PCB a first-class gaming platform. And so we added APIs for making use of hardware acceleration. There was direct input. There was some offshoots like Direct Show for doing video playback. And for sort of mainstream 2D graphics that we continued to support GDI, we did GDI Plus, and then we also did investments in Uniscribe to do text. And over time, what we've tried to do is make DirectX and the hardware acceleration that was provided through that sort of low-level platform become the foundation for all of the graphics that we were doing. And so we added two new APIs during Win 7 to essentially replace the text support in GDI, so that's DirectWrite, and the 2D output support in GDI, that's Direct2D. And so you can think of Direct2D as being analogous to Direct3D. So we can expand this box a little bit, and there's a bunch of boxes in here now. So there's D2D, there's DWrite, there's D3D, and in particular, I'm going to highlight D3D10. There's DXVA for video acceleration. There's DXGI is the graphics infrastructure. So this was, as part of Windows Vista, we were trying to do a cleaner job of separating swap chain and adapter management from the actual rendering operations. And so that functionality is now in DXGI. Now over here, we still have GDI and GDI Plus. And in GDI today, we also have things for configuring the screen that you can set, configure the multi-mon, set the display resolution. And long term, we want to see that migrate into DXGI. And so we've got sort of the start of that there. So in virtually every single one of these areas, each one of these should have its own little box. We've either added the box as a complete new thing or made some improvements in the area. And so I can sort of quickly go through some of these other changes. So I think we'll end up having more Channel 9 talks on D2D and D-Write.
So this is new, and that's new, right?
Yeah, these are brand new. You know, the boxes didn't exist before. These boxes existed before, but we've augmented them. So like one of the things that comes as part of this package is, again, we'd like D3D DirectX in itself to be the foundation for all the graphics. So what we had done in Windows Vista was change things so that we had Direct3D 9 in XP, and it continues to work in Vista and everything else. But we did a brand new API where we tried to clean up and regularize things, including doing this split between DXGI and D3D 10. But we made it so that as part of this regularization, that it only worked on specific D3D 10 hardware. We also did, as part of the Windows 7 work, we wanted to broaden the reach of this style of API, so we changed Direct3D 10 so that it could work on 9 hardware. And you know, a lot of the reason for doing this was, you know, we want to make it so that applications can target the broadest range of hardware, but still have some reasonable set of capabilities. And in Windows Vista, the compositor DWM was written on top of Direct3D 9. We moved it to Direct3D 10 and this new 10 on 9 API, or this 10 on 9 subset, mm-hmm. as part of Windows 7 work. And of course, D2D takes advantage of the Direct3D 10 APIs to do its internal implementation. And in addition, we also have software rasterizers for both Direct3D 10 and Direct2D. For DXVI, I'm not going to talk a huge amount of detail, but you know, sort of HD playback is becoming increasingly important. So there are some things that we added to it to sort of keep up with what kinds of capabilities or features are required to do HD playback. So I think that kind of sort of covers the what are the new APIs and what additions have we made. And again, you know, the goal is this is the direction that we're going in, that we want to build everything on top of these sets of boxes. Now, you know, it kind of didn't completely end there, that we also added a Direct3D 11. And this is a place where we've kind of are trying to learn our lesson about compatibility, API compatibility. So Direct3D 11 is the API is intended to be a proper superset of the Direct3D 10 API. Okay. And so it's relatively easy to change an application to make use of Direct3D 11. And of course, it adds some interesting new hardware features. It adds tessellation and some new texture formats. And probably the most significant feature is it adds something called the compute shader. And the compute shader is for people that are interested in doing more general programming processing of sort of data parallel applications. So what was happening is with Direct3D 10 or Direct3D 9, you would, if you wanted to go process a big array, you had to turn it into a texture map triangle rendering operation, and it just seemed kind of arcane to do this. In the compute shader, you simply write a program that operates on an array, and the array can be 1D, 2D, or 3D. And we also included some other generalizations to the graphics programming model that allow you to do scatter or to do some atomic operations. So what we're hoping is that with the compute shader, we'll have enabled developers to be able to do some more sophisticated, you know, not your average game processing kind of stuff, but make it easier to, say, do photo processing or things that have nothing to do with pixels at all.
So basically you're saying that do you have like a, you have, we'll be able to use the GPU, or would I say GPUs on the graphic card for multi-purpose programming?
That's right.
That's cool.
And it's something that, you know, there's been developments that have been happening all the way along, and this is probably the most significant thing that we've done. Like in Direct3D 10, we added integer instructions and IEEE floating point formats to kind of make it more possible to do the programming. Direct3D 10 tries to change the programming model so it doesn't involve so much sort of arcane graphics concepts like drawing a triangle.
Okay. So looking forward on the, you know, on the next version of Windows, we can, of the next version, what we would like to see is developer investing in these technologies and kind of deprecating or stepping back from all the technologies.
That's correct. Now, that isn't to say we're just like abandoning them completely. We're still doing work, and I can say a few things about what we've done to GDI and GDI Plus. For example, GDI Plus had its own imaging codecs for reading image files, and there's a component that I haven't talked about called WIC, which is Windows Imaging Component, which also showed up as part of Windows Vista, and that is intended to be our one centralized way of reading and writing image files. And what we wanted to do is make that be the most secure, most robust, you know, most featureful way of doing things. So we've relayered GDI Plus to use WIC as its codecs rather than having its own different code base for the codecs. And we're trying to get other parts of the other applications to get on top of WIC instead of having their own custom libraries. In GDI and in the sort of Windows system proper, we've done some things to try to improve the responsiveness of the system and be a little bit more multi-core supportive. In particular, there are places where we have locking to try to control synchronization to shared variables and things like that. We've tried to increase the ability for applications to be able to do stuff concurrently. And so that is going and looking at the locking that happens inside those subsystems and try to improve the distribution of locks so that they don't end up bottlenecked on a single thing. So these would be cases where you might see the ever popular green ring spinning. Yeah. And what is happening is someone's holding a lock inside user, inside win32k.sys, and blocking that application from making progress because perhaps some other application is paging in a bitmap or something like that. And we've tried to reduce the contention around some of those locks or make some paths be more independent. And so you'll see some amount of green rings disappear, but you're not going to see them all go away because it's kind of a hard problem. But again, what we're trying to do is, these things are still first class supported in the system, and we want to make sure that those components work well.